This is the TTY Dialer, show number 7 for the week of December 5th through December 10th. Hi, this is Mark Levonier, and it's your weekly companion to WRVO's old-time radio show tuned to yesterday, where you can hear golden age of radio comedy, mystery, suspense, drama, adventure, romance, science fiction, and much more every single night of the week, and whenever you want at WRVO.org. This podcast is best listened to on Sundays, as it brings you a blend of radio history, a look at the schedule coming up in show for this week, and also fun with sound from radio's yesteryear. So I welcome you to this podcast, maybe not as bombastic as this welcome.
From coast to coast, 45,000 Texaco dealers welcome you to the opening of the Texaco Star Theater.
Hey, what's going on? Who woke me up? Where's Uncle John? Turn the fire. Who's got my shoes?
Well, we've got him up at last. Sit down right here, sir. I'm about to tell the folks about Fire Chief gasoline. Fire Chief, you know, is not like ordinary gasoline.
No.
Fire Chief is emergency-grade gasoline.
That's it.
Built to give quick, easy starts, lightning acceleration, full, sustained power.
And you woke me up for that?
Why, yes, because that's why driving with Fire Chief is so helpful to you in traffic.
I suppose so.
Why it is so dependable on the hills.
Yeah.
So thrilling on the straightaways.
Go on.
It responds instantly to the lightest, most feathery touch on the accelerator.
Uh-huh.
Why, it's a gasoline that you
can't... Hold on there, Elfideldo. What is all this piffle-dinkle?
Piffle-dinkle? Would you please stop annoying me?
Will you stop annoying me?
Oh, so you don't like it?
No, I don't like it.
Well, who are you not to like it?
Who do you have to be not to like it?
Now, listen here, Sunshine.
Name is Sparks. Ned Sparks.
Well, Mr. Sparks, maybe you don't like this, but there are millions of people out there enjoying this entertainment.
Entertainment? You call this aching void entertainment? Where's all this funny stuff?
Will somebody please stuff a handkerchief in his mouth?
If they do, it'll be the best gag of the evening. What's the point of all this?
Well, the point is simply that Fire Chief helps you get every last ounce of mileage out of every gallon. It's great for fire engines.
Would you mind repeating that?
I said it's great for fire engines.
I hate to let you down, but it so happens that in my particular set, very few people drive fire engines.
That was an excerpt of the Texaco Star Theater. The sponsor of the self-titled show, Texaco Gasoline, was in that capacity on radio from the early 1930s, with comedian Ed Wynn as master of ceremonies, then Jimmy Durante, comedian Zettie Cantor, later Fred Allen. And the show is a quintessential variety hour with performers, jokes, skits, interviews, and music, which in its last incarnation with comedian Milton Berle at the helm helped to launch his TV career under the Texaco name, which placed him literally front and center in the new medium, which in turn made him one of TV's biggest stars. Now, this week, with the 75th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack coming up, the Texaco Star Theater, in its broadcast following that tragedy of December 7th, 1941, was notable, as they opened with this message.
It's Texaco time. This program will be interrupted for any important news flashes. And now, Larry Elliott.
This is the first Texaco Star Theater broadcast ever to go on the air without its distinguishing air signature, the sound of the siren and bell. This change has been made because the siren has now become a signal of alarm and danger throughout our nation. So to avoid any possibility of confusion or disturbance to our listening audience, the sound of the siren and bell will be missing from the Texaco Star Theater until further notice. Yes, within the last 2 days, America has seen great changes. The shock of being at war has made itself felt in the heart of every American and has influenced the thinking of every citizen. Tonight on the air, we hope that our Fred Allen show, going on as usual, will provide our audience with helpful diversion. For civilian morale is important when the first task of every American is to help make America strong. To this task, we dedicate our manpower, our machines, our industries. In this respect, the Texas Company is proud to report that the strength of our vital oil industry is by far the greatest in the world. Even the Texas Company alone produces more petroleum than all of Europe, exclusive of Russia. Yes, all of us have our job to do in helping to make America strong. And every American pledges with heart, hand, and mind to make it stronger and stronger.
So in terms of the shows we're playing on the air this month, we'll have a split in the schedule. I'll explain in just a little bit, but usually a three-month cycle happens when it comes to the genres that I have weeknights on the show. So this is a change from what we've been used to for the last 3 months. This Monday, December 5th at 10 o'clock, it's an hour of adventure with episodes of Escape and Quiet Please. Then Romance returns to Tune to Yesterday. It's been a few months, with episodes of the Screen Guild Theater and the Silver Theater.
I told you we should come to Monte Carlo.
Indeed, sir.
She's beautiful, Barclay. She's perfect. You should see her eyes, blue and laughing. Her hair, with just the faintest shade of red in it.
And her father, sir, he wouldn't be Thomas O'Rourke?
Why, yes, as a matter of fact, he is.
Ah, then you were right, sir. Monte Carlo has brought us luck. To think that you should have started it off so well.
Started it off? What are you talking about?
The girl's father, Thomas O'Rourke. I had him all picked out, sir. He's our next, our final victim.
This Tuesday night, December 6th at 10 o'clock, comedy from Fibber McGee and Molly and the Quaker Party show from 1938. And at 11, it's Westerns with The Six Shooter featuring Jimmy Stewart and Have Gun Will Travel from 1959. You can hear these shows on Tune to Yesterday this Monday and Tuesday night, December 5th and 6th, live on the air on WRVO, or streaming live at WRVO.org from 10 to midnight. Some months ago, I ran across some tape that was released by the Library of Congress, and it proved to be really fascinating listening. In the days following the Pearl Harbor attack on December 7, 1941, many radio producers were tasked with a project by the Library of Congress, and that was to record man on the street or in-studio interviews, bringing out people's opinions of the U.S. getting into what would be named World War II. Here's a moment from one of those interviews recorded on the street in Washington, D.C. on December 8, 1941.
How do you feel now that the war has begun? How do you feel it's going to go?
Well, I don't see any reason why the United States can't win.
Do you expect the other countries to join in? There seems to be a rumor in tonight's paper that the other countries are, that Germany and Italy have joined with Japan. How do you think that will affect the whole issue?
No, that probably will no doubt have some effect. I'm not informed well enough to say yes or no, but just offhand, I don't think Italy can offer much help. Some, of course.
How about the other people where you work? What was their reaction? What did they say when...
Very much the same as mine. They just about the same as I would express there. They're all different angles, but boiled down, it meant practically the same thing.
Did they feel that it was good that the uncertainty was over, or were they worried about it?
No one seemed to be worried. They all seemed to be glad. And after checking the news flashes on the Navy bulletin board, they kept waiting and was anxiously waiting for war to be declared. It seemed to be the general impression that I got.
Is there anybody else that would say a word for us? Won't you, come on, just, how did you feel when you first heard the news of the war?
Well, I couldn't say anything. I didn't know what to say or think. I didn't think it was coming on so soon, but I guess we all had a feeling it would be on.
And how do you feel now that it has begun? How do you feel it's going to go?
Well, I hope that everything can be settled within a short time.
Do you think it is going to be a short war?
I think so. I hope so.
And what do you mean by short, that we'll knock Japan out, or that...
Well, I hope we beat the hell out of them.
Now you're fighting. How about if Japan and if Italy and Germany join? There's some rumor in the paper tonight that they have joined.
I think that our Air Force is strong enough to beat them all. I hope it is.
Well, let's all hope. How about you? Will you give us a word? Are you, how old are you?
I'm 19.
What's your name? How do you feel about this thing as a coming generation?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't want us to go to war. I mean, like everyone else, would like to keep out of it. But now that we're in there, I hope we go to work on them and really give them something that they'd be sorry for. I really think that they were kind of forced in it by Germany. I mean, part of a prearranged plan, sort of, that too many supplies were going to England and was hurting Germany, and we're beginning to feel it, Russia, England.
Impressions from people on the streets of Washington, D.C. the day after the Pearl Harbor attack from December 8, 1941. Now, this Wednesday night, we'll be kicking off the evening with an hour of true history on Tune to Yesterday. with an episode highlighting the president of World War II for most of it. These Are Our Men, it's called, from 1944. Then a mix of Pearl Harbor coverage as heard on radio. In the 11 o'clock hour this Wednesday night, December 7th, it's an hour of crime with episodes of Mr. Chameleon and Dragnet. Then on Thursday, December 8th, that switch in the schedule I had mentioned, we get into our Christmas broadcasts, which will last from that day until Christmas night itself. We'll open up with some famous broadcasts. 10 o'clock Thursday night, the Lux Radio Theater brings us an adaptation of the film A Miracle on 34th Street. Then it's a Christmas-themed romance called Remember the Night on the Lux Radio Theater from 1940. So hear these shows Wednesday, December 7th and Thursday, December 8th from 10 to midnight on Tune to Yesterday.
Here we are with our senator from the Cannon County Hills, Uncle Dave making the Dixie Dewdrop with his plug hat, gold teeth, chin whiskers, whole horse and buggy hitched up outside, and Doris is right here with him. This first tune will be Cannon County Hills. All right, Uncle Dave, it's all good.
The Country Music Institution of the Air, the Grand Ole Opry. It was announced as such for the first time this Saturday, December 10th, 1927, by the man you just heard, announcer and founder of the show, George Dewey Hay. In the previous 2 years, Hay had been broadcasting a show of country, or what was referred to at the time as mountain music, out of WLS in Chicago. Music and a way of life that George was inspired by when he was traveling in the Ozarks as a boy. The show he was working with in the Windy City was the National Barn Dance, one of radio's most listened to music shows in the 20s. And that had started when he was hired as program director at Nashville radio station WSM. He really enjoyed the country musicians that would play on the air in irregular time slots, and he came up with the idea to corral what he called their tuneful melodies into a regular feature on the station, which, because he was program director, he had the power to do. So, on November 8th, 1925, Hay took to the air as George the Solemn Old Judge Hay, and his guest, who was a Civil War vet and champion fiddler, Uncle Jimmy Thompson, tore through his tunes with his family to accompany him, and the WSM Barn Dance was born. His show, just by being on the air, attracted musicians from all over the country who would show up at the studio with many instruments and little sheet music, and would perform songs that were passed down from generations that really evoked the spirit of the South and the heartland of a people who lived a simpler life with their family's music as the soundtrack. NBC's National Barn Dance was heard each Saturday night, and about 10 million people would tune in, with George Hay's WSM Barn Dance on the air local to Nashville. And I'm sure many listeners moved the furniture around to stomp and dance their way through an hour of those exciting songs. And that show on the air, the WSM Barn Dance, would follow a program called the Music Appreciation Hour, which would end every week with the words of the host referencing the previous 60 minutes of Grand Opera. So Hay would burst on the air the second they were live, and I'm not going to do an impression here, but he'd say, "You've been up in the clouds with Grand Opera, now get down to earth with us in a shindig of Grand Ole Opry." And that's where the name came from. So the show was filled with country and bluegrass and warm and twangy harmonies and plenty of picking, and it really struck a nerve with the listeners to the point where the hour-long show became a four-hour one from 8 to midnight. And from what I understand, the music didn't stop in the hall after the station signed off of the air. It also outgrew its venue from its custom 500-seat studio space in 1934 to the 2,000-person capacity War Memorial in Nashville in 1939. And thanks to all the revenue the show was making, WSM could afford a very powerful 50,000-watt transmitter and was heard well outside of Tennessee and even into Canada on a clear night. In that same year, 1939, NBC officially brought the show to their national schedule, and through several years of many affiliates being resistant to what they called a hillbilly show, by 1943, the show was on 140 NBC stations and would stay there through 1951. And in even bigger droves, musicians still flocked to Nashville for a chance to be on the show, including singer Roy Acuff, who said he waited 3 years to be on and ended up being heard nearly every Saturday night, hosting from time to time. And the exposure even helped when he was running for the governor of Tennessee in 1944. So the Grand Ole Opry not only made radio history in a lot of ways, but it helped to make the careers of countless country and bluegrass performers, from Ernest Tubbs and Hank Williams, even comedian Minnie Pearl. And as if radio wasn't enough, they even had a traveling show that at one time brought Bill Monroe, Jim Reeves, and Patsy Cline to Carnegie Hall. And with the Opry still going strong, as you can imagine, there's a ton of history surrounding this show that made its debut this Saturday, December 10th in 1927.
Here in Prince Albert's Grand Ole Opry House, we rededicate ourselves to keeping alive the songs and music of our forefathers, a heritage so rich that it cannot be valued in dollars and cents. First tune from the Chopping Block by Roy Acuff and all of his Smoky Mountain boys will be Old Joe Clark. Lead off, Roy, lead off.
Coming up this Friday night on Tune to Yesterday, December 9th at 10 o'clock, it's Christmas continuing with Phil Harris's program from 1947, where Jack Benny visits to play Santa, then an episode of Jack's show from 1940. At 11 o'clock, the Texaco Star Theater from 1938, and the Saturday night More Christmas from Broadcasts of Romance. The horror and suspense show lights out with a surprising Christmas broadcast. And in the 11 o'clock hour, the grittier side of Christmas with broadcasts of Suspense and Big Town.
Oh, Papa, Mr. Dusty, the photographer, has told me I will soon see Christmas trees and many helpers of St. Nicholas, which my GI friends called Sandy Claus.
Santa Claus, sweetheart. And Big Town is just crawling with them this time of year.
Yes, Greta. And if you'll come along with your father to my office tomorrow evening, I'll have Dusty take you out to meet some of Santa Claus' helpers.
To your office? Papa must go to your office?
Yes, Greta, but just for a little talk.
Oh, no, Papa. It was just for a little talk. You went at home and they put you in prison.
Not here, my dear.
And Mama, for food ration, she went and never came back. Never came back.
Not here, my darling. Don't be afraid. Not here. It will not happen here.
You can hear these shows this Friday, December 9th, and Saturday, December 10th from 10 to midnight on the air live on WRVO or streaming live at our website, WRVO.org. And I'd like to close out this TTY dialer with a birthday. This Thursday, Harold Arlen was born in 1895, and he would become known as radio's first full-time announcer. He worked for the earliest broadcasting radio station in the country, KDKA, based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He inquired about the announcing job purely out of curiosity because there were no commercial radio stations yet in the U.S. This was 1920. So when he got the job, he was known as chief announcer for the 2 hours the station was on each day. The inaugural broadcast on November 2nd, 1920, had Arlen reading election returns.
This is KDKA of the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company in East Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We shall now broadcast the election returns. We are receiving these...
And although at the time there was many hobbyists and engineers who would experiment with radio components and their broadcast capabilities, this election returns broadcast was the very first for the public at large who had bought a radio receiver in anticipation of radio being on the air full time.
We'd appreciate it if anyone hearing this broadcast would communicate with us, as we are very anxious to know how far the broadcast is reaching and how it is being received.
Those pieces of tape, a recreation of the events from that historic night. Less than a year later, Harold Arlen became the first person to announce a Major League Baseball game when the Pirates took on the Phillies in August of 1921, and later the first to provide play-by-play for a college football game. At the time, KDKA could be heard by listeners on several continents via shortwave, and he was known to Europeans as the best-known American voice. Here's some original tape of a chat with Harold Arlen himself years later, talking about some of the more precarious moments in his early days on the air.
Our first broadcasts really were not from a studio. They were from a tiny shack located on the roof of a six-story manufacturing building. We had a small room for the transmitting apparatus and a still smaller room for the phonograph equipment. We used this arrangement through the winter. In the spring, we moved to an auditorium in the manufacturing plant, but the acoustics there were not very good, so we went back to the roof and erected a tent, and we broadcast from the tent. One night, a storm came up and blew the tent off the roof. There went our first radio studio. Following this, we broadcast temporarily in the open air from the roof of the building, and that reminds me of another incident. In the spring and early summer, the moths and bugs would fly around the electric lamps that we used to light the roof. And one night, we had a tenor soloist on the program, and while he was singing, he started to hit a high note and he sucked a bug into his mouth, and he choked right in the middle of his song. About the same time, we had a soprano soloist from Pittsburgh who came out to East Pittsburgh. This manufacturing building from which our open-air broadcasts were being made was located right next to the Pennsylvania Railroad. This soprano soloist came out all dressed up in evening clothes. She looked beautiful. But right in the middle of her song, a Pennsylvania train went by and blew a great cloud of smoke and soot all over her hair, her face, and her dress. She just kept on singing through the smoke and soot and finally finished her song.
The voice of Harold Arlen, America's first full-time radio announcer, born this Thursday, December 8th, 1895. And that's going to bring this TTY Dialer to an end for the week of December 5th through December 10th. Thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. I hope you are enjoying it. And all of the old-time radio shows we're playing on WRVO every single night of the week, on the air and streaming live at WRVO.org. We also have a second stream of old-time radio from 8 to 10 every night on WRVO2. You can find out more about that at our website. Again, I had a couple of listeners write in this week about the show, about the dialer, and I appreciate hearing from you, so take a couple of minutes and let me know. Just email mark@wrvo.org. Any comments you may have, questions, it all goes back into making this the best it can be. That's mark@wrvo.org. Okay, that's it for now. Thanks for listening.